நாதனை நுபுர் கங்கநாதிபி. ஸ்னிக்தாமல குஞ்சித நீல குந்தலைர் விரோச்சமானஹாஸ பேஷலம் விபூஷிதம் மேகலய ஆங்குலிய கைர் மகாதனைர் நுப்புர கங்கணாதிபி. ஸ்னிக்தாமல குஞ்சித நீல குந்தலைர் விரோச்சமானஹாஸ பேஷலம் விபூஷிதம் மேகலயா ஆங்குலியகை மகாதனைர் நூபுர கங்கணாதிபி. ஸ்னிக்தாமலா குஞ்சித நீல குந்தலைர் விரோச்சமானஹாஸ பேஷலம் கங்கணாதிபி. சபேஷலம் மூலிகை மகாதனை நூபுர கங்கணாதிபி. ஸ்னிக்தாமலா குஞ்சித நீல குந்தலை விரோச்சமானஹாஸ பேஷலம் விபூஷிதம் மேகலயாங்குல்யகை Vaishnavis, Poshitam Mekalayanguliyakai Mahadhanayinu Purapakkanadihi Sikamalakunchikaniyakuntalai சோச்சமானஹாஸபேஷலம் விபூஷிதம் வெல் டெக்கோரேட்டட் மேகலயா வித் அன் ஆர்னமெண்டல் வ்ரேத் அபவுட் த வேஸ்ட் அங்குலியகை பை ஃபிங்கர் ரிங்ஸ் மகாதனை All highly valuable. Nupur, ringing leglets. Kankanadibhi, also by bangles. Snigdha, slick. Amal, spotless. Akunchita, curling. Neela, bluish. குந்தலை ஹேர் విరోచమాన వెరీ ప్లీజింగ్ ఆనన ఫేస్ హాస్ స్మైల్ పేషలం బ్యూటిఫుల్ ట్రాన్స్లేషన్ అండ్ పర్పోర్ట్ బై హిస్ డివైన్ గ్రేస్ ఏసీ భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామి శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద్. He is well decorated with an ornamental wreath about his waist and rings studded with valuable jewels on his fingers. His leglets, his bangles, his oiled hair curling with a bluish tint and his beautiful smiling face are all very pleasing. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the most beautiful person amongst all others. And Shri Sukadeva Goswami describes every part of his transcendental beauty one after another. In order to teach the impersonalist that the personality of Godhead is not an imagination by the devotee for facility of worship, but is the supreme person in fact and figure. The impersonal feature of the absolute truth is but his radiation, as the sun rays are but radiations from the sun. ఓం జ్ఞానతిమిరంధస్య జ్ఞానాంజనశలాకాయ చక్షురోన్మిలితం యేన తస్మై శ్రీగురవే నమః. నమాం విష్ణుపాదాయ కృష్ణప్రేష్టాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతే భక్తివేదాంత స్వామీతి నామినే. నమస్తే సరస్వతీ దేవే గౌరవాణీ ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాదీ పాశ్చాత్య దేశ తారిణీ వాంఛాకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపా సింధుభ్యైవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. జై శ్రీ కృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్తవృంద. హరే కృష్ణ హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. హరే కృష్ణ. టుడే వి ఆర్ డిస్కసింగ్ ఎ సెక్షన్ ఆఫ్ ది శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం which is depicting a theme that occurs repeatedly, that is the beauty of the ultimate reality, the personality of Godhead, and his supreme attractiveness is described over here. So we will try to today discuss about the nature of reality in terms of beauty and how we can become attracted towards the ultimate beauty of the Lord. So I'll talk about this in four parts. And I'll be using this whiteboard as a writing device. Those of you who are behind, I hope you can see it. So I'll talk about four R's. First, we'll discuss the nature of reality. Then I'll talk about how the reality that we experience can be a reminder of the ultimate reality. Then it can also require us to be redirecting ourselves, a redirection or redirector. And the last part will be, there is a refinement of perception that is required for perceiving the ultimate reality. So let's begin. In this verse, if we consider what is being described is the ultimate reality in very specific details. So specific details is the beauty of his, the ornament that he's wearing, the wreath around his waist, how his fingers are, how his, the rings around his fingers are, how his dress is. So the specific details, they serve a purpose. Now, within the broad domain of philosophy, there is a tendency to go in general philosophy has a particular way of functioning. Philosophy goes, if we consider the object, there is the appearance of the object, and then behind that, there's the substance of the object. So philosophy, literally it means the search for truth. Philly is love and sophos is truth. So lover of truth, that's what a philosopher is meant to be. So philosophy goes from the purpose of philosophy to search for truth means to go beyond the appearance to the substance. Right? One of the fundamental truths that we all intuit, even in our daily experiences, that there is more to reality than meets the eye. A person may look very attractive, but that person may be deceptive. On the other hand, a person may look very disorganized and shabby, but that person might be a genius. So there is more to reality than meets the eye. That is something which we all learn from our experience. But philosophy tries to systematize this intuition and try to approach all of reality in these terms. Let's go beyond appearance to substance. And while this is a universal principle of philosophy, often this principle is applied in a particular way. That is, say, we want to go beyond specifics to universals. The specifics are external. Say, so we want to go beyond the specifics to the universals. And in this approach, often there is an attempt to devalue the specifics. Okay, India has a tricolor flag. What do the tricolors mean? How does a tricolor, what do those three colors specifically mean? How do they relate with India? That's good. That we go beyond the specific symbols to the universal principle, what is there. While this approach is good for the material domain, but sometimes this approach is applied even to the spiritual domain. This is at the material domain, this can take us towards reality. But in the spiritual domain, then the same approach is taken. So, for example, there are specifics about Krishna. Krishna wears a peacock feather. Krishna plays a flute. Krishna herds cows. Now, what does this mean? So, if the philosophical approach tries to take us from specifics to universals. Now, sometimes some explanations may be given. Okay, yeah, that shows how Krishna loves nature, how Krishna is a God who, by his example, finds joy in the simple things provided by nature. A flute is not a complicated instrument. Peacock feather is a beautiful object provided by nature. Cows are the symbol of nature's magnanimity and maternal benevolence. So we could use such explanations like this, and that's fair enough. But that is, in one sense, preliminary. When it comes to the ultimate reality, the beauty and the joy and the ecstasy lies in the specifics. It is not in knowing, okay, Krishna wears this peacock feather because he loves nature. That means nature is higher and Krishna is lower. No, Krishna is such a wonderful person that he has such extraordinarily special, specific attributes. So we could say, in terms of, if we took a y-axis and x-axis, so in general, there are material specifics. From there, we try to go towards universals. But then beyond that, there are spiritual specifics. And spiritual growth means that we go from the material specifics to the universals. But eventually, we need to go beyond the universals to the spiritual specifics. But the impersonalists, they equate material and spiritual specifics. And that's why their idea of spiritual growth can sometimes be spiritual regress. Because they think that going beyond the specifics to the universals, that is what constitutes spiritual growth. That's why they say, okay, yeah, loving this form and everything is fine. But what's beyond that? So their mistake is that they are equating material specifics and spiritual specifics. Whereas the two exist at different levels of reality. So the Bhagavatam is being spoken to Parikshit Maharaj, who is about to die. And generally speaking, an encounter with death, or even an encounter with something near death, that forces us to reassess our priorities. We start thinking, what really matters in life? What is most important? That is what I need to focus on. So, with that in mind, when Shukadeva Goswami is speaking to Parikshit Maharaj, he will not go into details that are irrelevant. With death so close by, the focus will be on what really matters. And if it were the universals that were mattering more than the specifics, then the Bhagavatam would not spend so much time on the specifics. This is one section, but there are several sections in the Bhagavatam where the specific attributes and activities of the Lord are described. And most famously, in the 10th canto. So, this understanding is that there are specific attributes which point or which convey the highest reality. And that's important. To therefore meditate on the specifics. Not as a tool to some other reality beyond the specifics, but as the expression of the highest reality itself. So Krishna is a living, loving person and he has personal preferences. So, this is the bhakti understanding of reality which is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, this also leads to another consequence. What is the relationship of that ultimate reality with our present reality? Mm-hmm. What is the relationship of the ultimate beauty of the Lord with, say, the beauty that we experience in this world? So now, there is certainly maya or illusion in the world. So if we consider illusion, now the nature of illusion is itself very difficult to understand. Because if it were easy to understand, everybody would understand it. Isn't it? If a magician is performing some trick, but they also say it's a trick. But the trick is that the trick is not easy to see. Okay, how did you do this? So Maya is like the ultimate magician. So the trick is not so easy to understand. Now there are many different metaphors used to convey the nature of reality. So let's look at four metaphors. Now this itself could be a class. But I'm going to focus on a particular point. Of the difference between the Vaishnava approach to beauty in this world and the Advaitic, the impersonalist approach to beauty in the world. So, for example, a common metaphor could be a mirage. That everything in this world is like a mirage in a desert. Now, if we consider the mirage, what it conveys is that there is no reality here. And there is no water here at all. There is water somewhere, otherwise there would not be water seen at all. But there is no reality here, and the idea, there is no such mirage also existing. So there is no water existing out there, but there is no mirage also existing. It is we who are seeing the mirage. So the illusion is in us. No reality here, illusion in us. Now if we consider another example, is of an upside down tree. That is 15th chapter, first verse, which talks about it. Now this, also conveys that this is a reflection. And that is also a kind of illusion. But in this metaphor, the emphasis is that there is some agent out there which is creating the illusion. The mirage does not exist at all. It's just our mental construct. But when you talk about upside down tree, it's not entirely a mental construct. There is water and there is the reflection of a real tree in the water. So this emphasizes that illusion is, the illusion is created through some external agent. There is some reality in which that illusion is created. Now, another example is of a dream. That we, the material existence like a dream, and we just wake up from the dream. Now, this conveys a much subtler notion. What the dream idea conveys is that there has to be a change of state for us. That when a person is a dream, if they are having a nightmare, the experience of the nightmare is real for them at that time. And just telling them you are dreaming, well, they have to wake up from the dream. So this conveys that the experience is real and real change is needed. There is a process for waking up a person. That's a jiva jago. This is where the focus is often on the spiritual sound as a means for altering our experience. Now another example is drop and ocean. So now interestingly, Prahlad Maharaj in the same verse uses both these metaphors, mirage and drop. He says that Mrugatrishnirupa Kutra Shisha Shuti Sukha Mrugatrishnirupa. So he uses the word Mrugatrishnirupa, but then while offering prayers to Narasimha Devi, he also says Madhulavai, that there is a drop of nectar, durap, that it just is so intoxicating that one can't give it up. So a mirage and a drop are in fact not the same thing, they are opposite things. So why two opposite metaphors in the same verse? Because no metaphor can convey the reality completely. So now drop and ocean, what it conveys is, there is real reality here. But it is tiny. The emphasis on the tininess of the reality here as compared to the vastness of the reality there. Now Krishna, in fact this is the emphasis of the entire 10th chapter, Vibhuti Yoga, where Krishna says, Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam shrimad urjitam evava. That everything attractive comes from a spark of my splendor. So Krishna is not saying that everything attractive is Maya. See, everything attractive manifests a spark of my splendor. So, we will focus today on this particular metaphor, to understand not just the nature of beauty, but the link between the beauty in this world and the beauty beyond this world. Between the immediate beauty that we experience in this world and the ultimate beauty of Krishna. So, this was a little hard philosophical part. Maybe it will be a little simpler. So, I said I'll talk about four points. The first was, R is reality. Now we are trying to think of, from our immediate reality to the ultimate reality. The ultimate reality is the beauty of Krishna. So how do we make this journey? So for this journey, we'll talk about three R's. So the first R is reminder. That for us, the beauty in this world can serve as a reminder of Krishna's beauty. And especially bhakti utilizes this principle. In fact, bhakti is highly sensory spirituality. Now we are encouraged to engage our senses. In fact, so if we come to the temple, there is the beauty of the deities, but along with that, there are beautiful pictures, there is beautiful aesthetics, and all this is meant to remind us of a higher reality. So for example, now when the deities are there, the deities, the Krishna is sublimely, supremely beautiful. Krishna's beauty cannot be completely manifested in anything in this world. Now we said the deities are not in this world. That is true at a philosophical level. At the same time, the deities are made of matter in this world. But it is we who make the endeavor to at least create a small pocket in the material world where the beauty reminds us of the ultimate beauty. And this, in the Ujjwala Nilamani, is called as Uddipan. Uddipan means spiritual, it can be roughly translated as spiritual stimulus. Spiritual stimulus, this can be contrasted with material stimulus. So material stimulus refers not to the content of the stimulus, but rather the destination, the intent of the stimulus. So for example, If we see a hoarding of a upcoming cricket match, then that is a material stimulus. It immediately reminds us of, when is this match? I want to watch it. Do I want to watch it on TV? I don't want to go actually and watch it. How do I adjust my schedule? Immediately it triggers our mind and its imagination. So the stimulus we are talking about, it is not by the content, because everything in the material world, in terms of its content, will be material. We can't perceive the spiritual right now. But in terms of its intent, or also what it is meant for and how it affects us, we're looking at the nature of the stimuli from that perspective. So now, there are many material stimuli in this world. In fact, the whole advertising industry creates material stimuli by which our consciousness will get dragged and trapped in material things. But the underlying principle is universal. And that's what needs to be applied. So we create reminders in the material world for us to prompt our consciousness toward the spiritual, toward the ultimate reality. So now we cannot change the entire material world with Uddipans, with its stimuli. If we consider this as a broad material world, then within that, we create some small pocket where there are abundant spiritual stimuli. So even if in our home, our home will have to have any functional requirements, but one part of our home, we make it into an altar, a temple room. Even in our workplace, we may have some spiritual pictures or whatever. We create reminders of spiritual beauty for us. And these reminders are essential. And when we look at these reminders, when we expose ourselves to these, when we perceive these and we contemplate these, our consciousness moves toward the spiritual through the material. So we don't reject the material in toto. We use the material as a pointer to the spiritual. And this principle is both, there is this idea of Uddipan, there is both a universal aspect to it and there is an individual aspect to it. So the universal aspect is that there are certain Uddipans which are given by the Acharyas, given by Shastra, and we all such Uddipans, they are meant to be relished. Not just contemplated, but relished. See, the Bhagavatam, the first 1.1.1 starts with Dhimahi. But 1.1.3 is Pipata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam. So Dhimahi, that is more like moving from specifics to universals. Contemplate the ultimate reality. But Dhimahi is delight in the specifics, relish the specifics. So that is not Dhimahi, that is Pipata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam. Rasa comes from specifics.
So
it is, these are all meant to be relished. And there are some universals. If we come to the temple and we behold the Lord. But each one of us is an individual. And some days we may like, we may especially feel attracted to a particular way the Lord is dressed. There may be, and so that becomes our personal uddipan. Maybe we click that picture, keep that in our phone. And whenever our mind feels agitated or restless, we behold that beauty, we relish that beauty. Similarly, there are different pastimes of the Lord. Some pastimes may attract our heart much more. So it is important for us to create these reminders for ourselves. Or rather, either create the reminders or make the reminders accessible to ourselves. So presently in India, there is this debate going on whether India should be renamed as Bharat. And some people say it's just a political thing. So Shakespeare is quoted that, what's in a name? A rose will smell just as sweet if called by any other name. Well, yes and no. Why? Because in the philosophy of language, words have denotations and connotations. Denotations means what they point to. But connotation is what they remind us of. So if we have been using the word rose to refer to the object rose, and suddenly it's referred to by some other name. Okay, the rose will smell as sweet, but our mental picture won't be the same. So the connotations also matter. So if we consider the name India, from a functional denotation, whether India or Bharat, the country we can say is going to be the same. It's not that suddenly India is going to rise above the poverty line, or India is suddenly going to become spiritually awakened, or anything like that. That's going to be the same. But what it reminds us of, India, that name, is largely an extrinsic and geographical denotation. It is not used by Indians. It was given by people who came from outside to India. And it's, okay, it's just a geographical designation based on the fact that people on a particular side of a river called Indus lived. Now, Indus is not even in India now. So, that it may be used and prevalent. But what does it remind us of? In contrast, Bharat, now it has much more semantic significance. You can look at it from a historical perspective that there were kings Bharat, but from a philosophical perspective, it means absorbed in light. Bharata. Rata is absorbed. Comes from Bhaskar, that is light. So absorbed in light. So it actually signifies the historical mood of India. That here there were seers who shared the light of ultimate reality. And here there were seekers who sought that light constantly. So tamasoma jyotirgama. So this is a wonderful principle that can apply to all of humanity. To speak of India. So therefore, names have significance. And Bharat is pregnant with much more meaningful remembrance than what India is. So reminders are important for us to point us toward ultimate reality. That's the first thing. But that alone is not enough. Because not every beauty in this world will remind us of the Lord. So that's why, that brings us to the next part. We are talking about the journey from the immediate beauty to the ultimate beauty. That is, the second part is redirectors. That means when we experience something beautiful in this world, if it is reminding us of the Lord, that is wonderful. We relish it. But not every beauty in this world points us toward the Lord or reminds us of the Lord. If we take the example of the ocean, you know, from the ocean, many drops may come out. So some drop might be here, some drop might be here, some drop might be here. Now, if I am here, now this drop will take me toward the ocean. But this drop will take me away from the ocean. So both the drops have come from the ocean. So all drops come from the ocean, but all drops don't take us toward the ocean. Similarly, everything attractive comes from Krishna. But everything attractive doesn't take us toward Krishna. So, we don't deny the beauty of this world. So, everything attractive
if we consider that it comes from Krishna. So even if somebody is a movie star, anywhere they are very sensual and obscene or whatever, their beauty also comes from Krishna. But that beauty is not going to take us toward Krishna. Everything beautiful comes from Krishna, but isn't takes us to Krishna? Not necessarily. So it is important for us to take responsibility for ourselves. That if we encounter something attractive in this world which allures us away from Krishna, at that time it is we who have to redirect our consciousness toward Krishna. Yeah, we don't deny this water is all false. No, that water is beautiful. The beauty of this world is a reality. From a practical perspective also, there is a difference between people and how attractive they are. But even from a philosophical perspective, we consider that beauty is one of the six opulences of Krishna. And if anybody has any opulence, that is a result of past good karma. Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, Shribhir. All these are considered to be results of good karma. So if somebody is very intelligent, do we say that intelligence is all maya? Well, it may be, they may be using that intelligence to do something demoniac. This we had the 9/11 memorial just a few days ago in America. So then somebody used that demoniac intelligence to try to slam a plane into one of the biggest countries, most powerful countries, one of the iconic towers. That's demoniac intelligence. But the intelligence is real. Somebody has wealth, yeah, that wealth is real. Whether they are using it to go toward reality or not, that's a different question. But simply trying to deconstruct all beauty and say it's maya, that is an oversimplified understanding. Sometimes it may be required. But what we do is, if we can remember with our intelligence that this beauty is actually just a drop and Krishna's beauty is the ocean. So that stimulus won't redirect us. It is we who have to direct ourselves. So in one sense, the beauty that points towards Krishna, this can be a reminder. But this, when we pursue this, the redirection has to come from us. When we encounter this, we have to redirect ourselves. That will not redirect us. That will attract us. It will misdirect us. That's why our buddhi is important. Jiva Goswami says in the Sandarbhas that for somebody who loves Krishna, for somebody who has preeti, then they will naturally be attracted toward Krishna. But for till the preeti has been developed, till the preeti is not yet developed, buddhi is very important. So bhakti can be practiced through preeti, where it is more spontaneous. And this is where we can say reminders. We see stimuli and the reminders of Krishna. And depending on how much devotion we have, the remembrance will be that much faster and deeper. But bhakti is also to be practiced through buddhi. Because when the preeti is not there, when we are in a place where there are multiple uddipans, then one uddipan might be attracting us toward, multiple stimuli are there. One might be attracting us toward Krishna, another might be taking us away from Krishna. And we don't feel so attracted toward that which is taking us toward Krishna. Like we often talk about the higher taste and the lower taste. But the point is that, or the problem is that, the higher taste doesn't feel higher to us. Is it often the higher taste feels okay? The lower taste feels much bigger in many ways. So therefore, buddhi is required. So with buddhi, it is not spontaneous, it is conscientious. It is something which we have to practice. Prabhupada says in 521, 522 purport that strenuously we have to restrain our senses. They will just race toward the worldly objects. Now, but we don't just restrain our senses. Tani sarvani sanyamya. Sanyamya is there, but after that, yukta asita matparaha. So when we are attracted to a drop that is taking us away from the ocean, no, I won't go there. But just saying I won't go there is not enough.
I need to give my consciousness somewhere else to go. Yukta asita matpara. And if you do this, so this is where the redirection comes in. Redirectors. And then that brings us to the last part. The third R in our journey from immediate beauty to ultimate beauty. Immediate reality to ultimate reality. So we could say this journey has three lanes. One lane is the lane of reminders. Immediate beauty acts as a reminder for us. The other is redirectors. Redirection. And the four is refiners. Refinement or refiners. Now what does refinement mean over here? That refinement means it is for us to practice this process. Practice using the reminders and relishing them. Practice redirecting ourselves from other things. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that, say for example in 12.9 he says, Atha chittam samadhatum na shaknosi maistiram abhyasa yogena tato. Abhyasa yogena tato. What will happen by abhyasa? Abhyasa is practice. Practice is essentially a process of refinement. Maam ichcha tum dananjaya. You will get maam ichcha. You will get ichcha for me. What does that mean? You will start finding me more and more desirable. Right now, we find many things in the world very desirable. We don't find Krishna that desirable. But by practice. Krishna also talks about this later in the 18th chapter. Before he talks about the three kinds of pleasures. He says from 37 to 39. Before that he says, Abhyasa dramate yatra dukkhantam cha nigacchati. He says, Abhyasa dramate. It is again abhyasa. By abhyasa is practice. So abhyasa dramate yatra. By practice we will start delighting in this. Ramate. And this raman is special. When we start finding joy in the ultimate reality, the result in the long run will be that dukkhantam cha nigacchati, end of sorrow. When we become absorbed in Krishna, then the dukkha of this world, it will no longer be so distressing for us. And ultimately, when we attain Krishna, then we go beyond the dukkha. There's complete end of it. So this requires refinement. See, practice, it says practice makes perfect. Well, nobody becomes perfect, but practice does lead to improvement. Because perfection is always like a moving target. But still, practice does lead to improvement. And that's the purpose of practice. So without refinement, like say, if somebody is practicing archery, they are shooting the target. Now, each time when they are shooting, they need to be endeavoring to hit the target more. And by that, they will come closer and closer to where they are meant to hit. The English word is bullseye. It's quite a brutal metaphor. You know, you want to hurt a bull and in the eye, it's probably the most vulnerable and painful part to hurt. But, so I'm just using the word target here. But we hit the target. So, but the idea is, if somebody is just shooting arrows without caring where the arrows are going, well, you can keep practicing hundreds of times, millions of arrows you may shoot. But that's not going to improve. So there has to be refinement. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Bahu janme adhikare shavana kirtan. We can keep hearing and chanting, but if we are not trying to refine our consciousness, if it's just mechanical, then it's like, okay, it's like a ritual, I'm shooting the arrows, I'm shooting the arrows. But by shooting the arrows, try to hit the target. So like that, we need to consciously be trying to remember Krishna more and more. Both through the reminders and through the redirectors. When we keep refining, then we will move closer and closer to Krishna. We'll become absorbed in Krishna. I'll conclude with one example. So for this refinement, I talk about one example of archery practice. So archery, it is conveys more of conscious practice and conscious effort to improve. But another example I would like to use is of a firefighter. Sometimes we feel, I hear so much. And, you know, I want to speak, but still I keep forgetting Krishna. Still when Maya comes, I get provoked. So is it of any use? Well, actually, sometimes people say, I can't walk my talk. Or, well, bhakti is so wonderful that even the talking is a part of the walking. It's because kirtanam is also a part of bhakti. So, even if we speak about Krishna, we chant Krishna's name, and for the rest of the day we are forgetting Krishna completely. Okay, at least at that time we are remembering Krishna. So the talking is also part of the walking. So we shouldn't devalue the talking. We shouldn't devalue the hearing. But to fully value it, we also need to translate it into our real life. Rest of the life that we have. So, one of my friends in America is a firefighter. He's a devotee, a firefighter who became a devotee, American. She's telling me that his job is training firefighters, new people who join. So, he says, how does it work that when there is a huge fire, even the most seasoned firefighter, they go there, there'll be some alarm, there'll be some horror. So how big is the fire? And when a young firefighter, a new firefighter goes, then also there'll be alarm, there'll be horror. But the young firefighter might just, in horror, they just drop the fire hose and become paralyzed. Whereas the seasoned firefighter, that training and the instincts from the training kick in. There is a horror, but there are civilians over there. There is inflammable property over there. We have to stop the fire from going there. Let's attack it there. So, a momentary lapse, a momentary reaction of horror might be there. But the training is that the instincts kick in faster. When there is no training, whether there is training or no training, that horror may be there. But it is overcome faster. So similarly for us, by our practice of bhakti, even if we practice for 20, 30, 50 years, still the stimuli of this world may attract and agitate us. But after that, the training kicks in. The training kicks in, then I don't want to get attracted here. I want to get attracted towards Krishna. So we have that well-known verse of Yamunacharya, Yadavadi. When I see the beauty of this world, he says that, he's not saying I don't see the beauty of the world. I see the beauty. He's not saying that the pleasure of this world is, it's not there. When I see the pleasure of the world, right? Okay, this is not what I want. I want something else. So, that is an example of refinement at a highest level. So for us, we need to keep refining our bhakti. And this will happen at one level through conscious practice, like it happens through, when we are trying to archery, we are constantly trying to shoot. But it will also happen through subconscious instincts. That means, as we keep practicing sadhana regularly, as we keep studying shastra, speaking about these truths, then they will become more and more a part of us. And then when we are agitated, even without our consciously thinking, oh, I want to direct my consciousness away from here to there, immediately something within us will tell us, hey, think about Krishna. So when those instincts, when our devotional instincts start developing, when they start becoming active, that is the time when we start moving toward greater and greater safety. That means we don't have to consciously think and plan to take shelter of Krishna, but something within us becomes active and alert. It tells, hey, remember Krishna, take shelter of Krishna, chant his holy names, read something, hear something, talk with someone. Don't just get captivated. So in that way, we all will be on safer territory. Now, when exactly we'll get there, and sometimes we may be in relatively safe territory for one stimuli, but we may be an unsafe territory with respect to some other stimuli. Because it depends on the conditions that we have. But the key point is that the process of bhakti does work. And it can take us all beyond the dangerous and treacherous material world to the safe zone. The ultimate safe zone is absorption in Krishna. Once you are absorbed in Krishna, then we are not going to be agitated by Maya. So that is where the culmination of refinement is absorption. And once we are absorbed, absorption in Krishna is the ultimate perfection, both in this world and in the world beyond. Srila Prabhupada has provided us the International Society for Krishna Consciousness with so many resources for redirecting our consciousness, for reminding us of Krishna, for helping us to refine our practice. And thereby, we can move closer and closer to Krishna till we ultimately attain Him. So I'll summarize. I talked about 4 hours today. The first was reality. How the search for reality in philosophy normally takes people from specifics to universals. And that is good, but for the Advaitins, that may take them down. Because from spiritual specifics, they may go down to universals. And for them, that may be a journey, that is a journey down. So, spiritual growth means to go this way, upward, beyond universals. So that's why the specifics... Oh, let us focus on something specific now. Okay. So, we discussed how within the path of bhakti, the specifics so can also take us towards the... So, in one sense... The material specifics can also take us toward the spiritual specifics. We don't necessarily have to go toward the universals. We can, but in bhakti, this is the journey. We can go from the immediate experience of reality to the ultimate experience of reality. And how do we do that? We discussed 3 parts for that. First was reminders. That within this material world, there are things which can attract us towards Krishna. That is the Uddipan. So, I talked about primarily, we discussed various metaphors for understanding Maya. But we focus on the drop and the ocean metaphor. The other metaphors like dream and mirage and reflection, they are not so relevant for us within the practice of bhakti. So, Uddipan means, within this material world, there are certain, the broad world will be filled with many mundane stimuli, but within that we create a pocket where there will be spiritual stimuli. And these Uddipan can be both universal and individual. Something which is provided by Acharya and something which is our own attraction, our own taste. And then, with these, while these reminders are important, but then we also need redirection. Because we need redirectors or redirection because not everything attractive takes us towards the Lord. So if, say, this is the ocean and we are here and there are drops which take us toward the ocean and drops which take us away from the ocean. So these we need to redirect. We need to use these as stimuli for redirecting our consciousness toward Krishna. So this requires buddhi. We need to have a sharp intelligence by which when we are exposed to the sensory beauty of the world, then we are able to redirect our consciousness toward Krishna. And the last part was refinement. That these 2 things, reminding ourselves of Krishna and redirecting ourselves, these are something which we need to practice regularly. Practice to improve. And we talk about 2 metaphors for practice. One is archery, where it's conscious endeavor to hit the target. So we consciously try to increase our remembrance of Krishna while we are doing the various bhakti practices. And the other was firefighting, where the subconscious training, the subconscious instincts also play a picture, come into the picture. And in this way, by all of this, we can come towards the ultimate safety that comes through absorption in Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any quick question or comment? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Guruji, for a brilliant class. This one class, if practiced in our life, can transform so beautifully and so powerfully. Grateful to you, Guruji, for this wonderful presentation. Prabhu, my question is on the refinement. As you so beautifully presented it, one is the archery way where we again and again try to focus, okay, This is the thing. In Krishna consciousness, whatever reminders are coming, let me redirect it towards Krishna again and again, focusing on the goal. And the second point which you told, second example, Guruji, about subconscious instinct. So, is it like the earth pravritti in our devotional service is going to help in this direction? Can you a little bit clarify?
Yes, good point. The subconscious transformation means that whenever we do something repeatedly, it creates impressions within us. And as those impressions keep growing, then those impressions will prompt us again and again. So that prompting is not something which we have to do. It's something just comes from within. It's like if you consider our browser. Maybe we have visited, has any of you heard of this place? You know, suppose somebody has visited a website called Bollywood.com. They visit 100 times, 1,000 times on their phone browser. And they come to a spiritual talk and they hear about the Bhagavad Gita. And they want to know what is the Bhagavad Gita. So, they open their browser and type B. And what happens? Bollywood.com comes. Now, they have to endeavor to type the full 11 words or 12 words to get to Bhagavad-gita.com. But if they keep typing it, once, twice, thrice, 10 times, 50 times, after some time, as soon as they type B, the browser will itself give Bhagavad-gita.com. So like that, if we consciously keep practicing bhakti, not ritually, not ritualistically, but consciously, conscientiously, with intentionally you could say, with the intention of wanting to be attracted toward Krishna, that is the key difference. The browser is completely mechanical. Our mind is not. See, the impressions in our mind, the samskaras, the Patanjali Yoga Sutra explains, that they are determined by three things. The repetition has to be there. The frequency of repetition. So, it is not just, you have to repeat it, but how frequently you repeat it, the intensity of the repetition. That how much are we involved in the process. If I am just, okay, hearing the class, but I am thinking about 100 other things. And I may hear the class daily, but I am not getting involved in it. So, frequency is mechanical, and that also helps. That's why I said that, what is that, the verse before, Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu. Prayeshu. Even by mechanical, some amount of change happens. But that's not the, Prabhupada says in the purport, but we actually want a complete change. So, there is the intensity, there is how often do we do it, there is the intensity, how much we are trying to focus on it, and there is the duration. How long do we do it? Like if you open a particular browser and keep it open for a long time, the browser also sees that. So if you are doing it for a long time, you are doing it more frequently, and we are doing it with more consciousness invested, then the transformation is much faster. So, when this happens, when our inner world itself changes, the samskaras inside us change, then naturally, whenever we feel dissatisfied, whenever we feel down, whenever we feel annoyed, irritated, instead of we thinking of sensual pleasure as the refuge, we will, something within us will prompt us, oh, remember Krishna. That is your refuge, that is your shelter. Okay? Thank you. So, thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Itai Gaur Premanandi.
Thank you very much. That's a wonderful class.